morning, sir. If you could just hold for one moment while we get some paperwork in order, we'll be ready to get started in just one moment, sir. So just hold one second, sir. Sir, would you be kind enough to state your name and your ADC number for the record, sir?
Stephen Ward, 108-103.
Mr. Ward, you're appearing for the Arizona Board of Executive Criminality this morning for your parole hearing, and based upon information that we have, you have been certified by the Department of Corrections for a 412B 411 hearing today. That means that you would be making a determination whether to move you to your next parole, you to your next consecutive sentence, or absolute discharge. Unfortunately, we will be doing this by telephone this morning because due to some technical issues on our end. But I'm going to just make a few comments and then we will talk to you. I would also point out, I believe that you do have an attorney present this morning. You also have some supporters present this morning as well. So we also have victims. And so we will be talking to them just a little later, but right now I'm just going to make some comments, and then once I complete my comments, then you and or your attorney will be given an opportunity to make a statement, and questions will be raised by board members. That will be followed by, in case we have any supporters present today, we would ask them to participate as well. And then the victims and attorneys, and then we will give you an opportunity to make a final statement to the board. Do you understand the direction that we will be going this morning, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, based upon information that we have, and please feel free to make any corrections that you feel would be necessary, because we're going on information that we've gleaned from the information that you've presented to us, as well as information from the pre-sentence report and other information that's been presented to the board. According to information that I have at the moment, you're currently serving a sentence, murder in the first degree, and this sentence began on March the 17th, 1992. You became parole eligible on April 16th, 2017, and this sentence was a 25 to life sentence. If this board sees fit today to parole you to your next sentence, that would be for sexual assault, which is an 18-year sentence, as well as for burglary in the second degree, as according to information that I've gleaned, they are concurrent, and you will be paroled to those. As I've stated, the sexual assault is for 18 years, and the burglary is for 15 years, and then you would be paroled to those if this board saw fit today to move you forward. I would also point out, sir, that we also have your progress report that's been submitted to the board. We do take note that you had a number of programs over the years, and most recently you had some even in 2017. I do show that you had HVAC, I guess that's air conditioning. You also have some plumbing this year, and then in 14 you had some others. So have you completed the program for this year, the HVAC or plumbing? Have you completed those this year, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so are you enrolled in any program or counseling at this time, sir?
Yes, I am taking an ASU class on epidemiology, health and wellness in society.
Okay, sir.
I'm going to graduate on 12-1.
Oh, congratulations. Would you be receiving a baccalaureate degree from ASU? Is that what you're telling the board, sir?
Yes.
Well, congratulations. We're so proud of you. We know that things are working and moving forward for you at this time. Have you had any other programming that you feel that would be helpful to you once you are moved to your next consecutive sentence, and eventually when you are released? Any other programming that you want to call to the attention of the board? Because you have a whole list. I'm not going over the entire list, but any others that you feel that the board ought to concentrate on, sir?
Yes, I have taken and completed a U of A course on horticulture, and I've taken and completed Small Business 1, Small Business 2, Introduction to Business, and Small Business Management. I have currently almost 50 college credits, so I am very close to being able to get certification.
Okay, sir. And I know for the purpose of today's hearing, this is not to release you, but once you are released, I'm going to assume that at some point you will be released in the future. What are your plans? I know you're taking all these courses and will be receiving your degree very shortly from ASU. So what are your future plans, sir?
I do not want to sound like I'm pandering in any way. That is not my intention. I do not want to say if you let me out of prison, I want to do this or that. However, I've taken responsibility for what I've done. I was a monster, a real horrible person when I was 17. I committed an unspeakable act. And ever since then, I have had a dream to get out of prison and help people when I get out. And in my way of doing that, I want to set up a charity foundation. The victim's name is Miss Webster, and I want it to be called Worldwide Webster Foundation, and it's to help victims and victims like families who have been sensibly murdered or killed, people who cannot, like breadwinners. I don't want to sit there and ever see a family go homeless because they cannot sit there, they don't have insurance or anything like that. I want to sit there and start up a foundation to help all the victims. It is near and dear to my soul, and I feel that whether if I'm let out in 20 years or 30 years or 40 years, this is something that I'm going to do. And it hurts me to know that I have caused so much pain in this life, and this is something that I want to do. I want to sit there and affect change in this positive way. I don't want to be just the guy who went to prison and got out of prison and did nothing with their life. I want to sit there and be the guy that went to prison, owned up to what he did, and decided he was going to make a positive change in this world.
Okay, sir. Well stated. I also take note that correctly so, as it relates to your release plan, you did not have a current release plan because this is a 412B 411 hearing, and therefore that would not be applicable at this time. I would also just take note that your last, I believe if I saw it correct on Ames, your last discipline would have been in 2003, and that was your last one, I believe. So things have been working out quite well for you in recent years in terms of disciplines. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sir. And let me just introduce you to the board members. There are four board members participating in your hearing today, and they are the Honorable, although you cannot see us, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, the Honorable Mr. Louis Kiwanis, and the Honorable Mr. David Neal. And my name is C.T. Wright. I'm board chair as well as serving as your panel chair this morning. I would point out the fact that according to what I've gleaned is that the last time you appeared before this board would have been March the 27th of this year. At that time, you were denied a 412B or 411. But the reason I point that out is that two of the current board members who are present today did participate in that hearing, and that was the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis and myself. The other two board members, this is the first time that they will have had an opportunity to speak with you, and they are the Honorable Mr. David Neal and the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. They were not on the board back in March of this year. You've already alluded to the offense itself, and so I'm just going to make just a very few quick comments, and then I would just be ready to listen to you and your attorney. Based on information that I've gleaned, that you've, as I've already indicated, that the offense took place back in March of 1992, and at that time, the victim's daughter was found a mother that she had that she was nude in her house, and that she had been murdered. I believe that she was about 47 years of age at that time, and that she had blows to her head with a hammer. She had been sodomized, and shaving cream was in her private areas, and I'm just going to be very careful how I put it. And at that time, you, the defendant, was eventually questioned and arrested, and apparently there was some blood on your tennis shoe, and that matched that matched what was found at the crime scene. You initially you denied involvement and refused to answer questions without an attorney. And I would also point out that November 19, 1996, the Court of Appeals affirmed the defendant's convictions and sentence. And I also take note that we do have a well outlined psychological evaluation that have been included, and we have a number of letters, support letters that are found in the files as well. So at this time, any information that I presented so far that you wish to say that is not correct or that it was a misinterpretation on my part, sir?
Everything is correct. However, when I was first brought into jail, my attorneys at the time told me to sit there and keep quiet, not to take the stand, to sit there and just maintain a defense of innocence. And then once I was found guilty, all I could do at that point was maintain the innocence stance for the appeals. However, it was shortly afterwards when my appeals and everything failed that I tried to get a hold of the victim's family to apologize, to explain stuff, because I didn't want them to feel like lifers as well. I was a lifer. I deserved to be here, but in my mind, the victim's family didn't deserve to be lifers as well. And so I tried to get a hold of the state of Arizona, the Department of Corrections, to help me get in contact with the victim's family, but they would not respond back to me. So, you know, it is my deepest regret that they've had to suffer the way they've had to suffer all these years. That's why it went down like that, sir.
Okay, sir. As you said, because of advice from your attorney that you had not, was unable to speak. Remember that this is not a trial. We're not judges. This is not a trial. We're just trying to make a determination whether to move you to your next consecutive sentence at this particular time. In your beliefs, and let me just say this, at this time, do you want to continue to talk to the board, or do you want your attorney to speak at this, or do you have an attorney present today? I don't believe you have an attorney present today. Therefore, I want to just ask you a few questions, and other board members will also be asking you questions. Was you on drugs, or did you have a psychological problem, or what was going on in your mind at the time that this offense was committed, sir?
I wasn't on drugs. I don't do drugs. I was severely depressed. I got into trouble a couple times, and it was determined, I saw a counselor who determined that it was an adrenaline rush. I was on probation for breaking into vehicles, not stealing them or anything, but breaking into them, and then, you know, running and chasing, getting chased, and that was because I was so depressed. They called it an adrenaline rush high. And so when that was going on, that put me under probation. And so I was grounded with my probation. I couldn't hang out with friends really anymore. And so I was severely depressed.
So what has happened since 1992 that you feel that you ready to be paroled to your next consecutive sentence if this board's all fit? Anything in particular that, I know you've taken courses and you're about to receive your degree from ASU and all of that, but is there anything, was there something that happened that changed you as a different person from what you were when you committed this offense into what you are today, sir?
Yes, sir. I am not depressed anymore. I could not take drugs for my depression. I fixed myself. I used to smoke and to nicotine because of my depression, and I was able to fix myself for like the last 15 years. I haven't smoked or chewed. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. I look at everything in a positive way now because I feel that I'm different than most of the people here because of the way I look at life right now. I see myself as a positive a person, as not such a negative person. I made a mistake when I was younger, and it was horrible. I can never come back from that mistake. And so ever since then, I've been doing the best of my ability to better myself as a human being and a positive member of society. I just want, I know that nobody out there can hear what I'm saying, but I truly am sorry and apologetic to the victim's family. I've been trying to sit there and rectify that situation for a long time. So I am definitely not the person I was before. I am not a child anymore. I learned to take responsibility for my actions. I'm not a narcissist. Like my psychologist said in our 5-minute interview as a child, you know, I am not a bad person. I just truly made a really bad and horrible mistake.
Why did you make that mistake, sir? Did you know the victim? What persuaded you to go to that that residence at that point to commit this horrible offense, sir? What happened? Why did you know them, or what happened? Why are you selected them?
I knew Kelly. Growing up, we weren't really close friends or anything like that, but I knew her and her mom. And part of the depression came about was I couldn't do anything. Didn't have friends and stuff like that. And I had a paper route. And occasionally, when I'd drive by, Miss Webster was there to talk to. And it's gonna sound horrible, but we started talking and I was severely depressed, and she consoled me, and that's what started it. And I was with Miss Webster on three different occasions, and it progressed. It was nothing serious until this last time. But my dad told me a long time ago to backtrack. If he ever caught me sneaking out of the house again, that he would call the cops. And for the longest time, that was a fear that me and my friends would discuss over and over again, that once you go to prison, your bunkie is going to be named Bella, and he's gonna rape you. And so when this all went down, that scared me straight for a long time. And on this particular weekend, it was St. Patty's Day weekend, and my parents, because I was doing good for so long, for a couple months, they decided to let me hang out with my friend a little bit more. And it was a Saturday night, and we were out at a billiards place, and it was time for me to go home, and my friends were all angry with me because they had met some girls. And I had to beat the bear about me. They had to drive me home. Well, because I had church in the morning. And so when I went home, I was so upset because of the way my friends were acting towards me that I was mad at my parents. And so I snuck out, and I went over to my friend's house, Brian's house. And my dad caught me. He caught me sneaking out, and I had nowhere to go. I couldn't go to my friend's house. He was out searching for me. And so I stayed out, and the only place that I could think of going was to Cheryl's house. And in my mind, my parents were school teachers. And I figured if I ran away for spring break and I came back just after spring break, that they would think that in my mind that school would be more important than me going to prison and so to jail. And so that was my intention. And when I went over to Cheryl's house, I was sobbing, I was crying, and I didn't know what to do. I was lost. And the hugging and the consoling turned into something more. And we started having intercourse. After a while, she stopped and she wanted to try something different. That's when the sodomy, you call sodomy, came in. It wasn't sodomy; it was anal sex, and that's where the shaving cream came in. And when we were doing this, she was like, slow down, slow down. And I wasn't experienced. I don't know what I'm doing. And I guess I was hurting her. I was tearing her a little bit, but she never told me to stop. And afterwards, it was so gruesome. I mean, when I'm looking down and seeing what I'm doing, and I'm seeing just what's happening, you know, a little bit of blood and feces and shaving cream, and I freaked out. My brain just freaked out. I couldn't handle it. It was too much for me. A 17-year-old, money at least wasn't ready for anal sex, and I went crazy, and I left, and the hammer was sitting right there, and before I knew it, I was hitting her over the head multiple times, and it just, she was trying to put on her clothes. She was still naked, and she was trying to put on her clothes, and I was just out of my mind. And before I realized when I snapped to what had happened, I'm sitting there and I'm crying, and I'm like, no, Cheryl, I'm sorry, wake up, please wake up, I'm sorry. And it was traumatic for me, and there's no excuse for what I did. I never raped her, I never sodomized her. You know, it was consensual, but because we had an understanding that no matter what, you cannot say nothing to nobody for any reason, no bragging to friends, no nothing. And so when X-ray happened, I was freaking out. In my mind, I'm like, okay, I was never here, I don't know everything. And so I left. And when I got caught, and the police found me, at the time, it was like, I was never here. And so they ended up taking me to jail, and when I got to them, the attorneys were like, you know what, you just need to shut up, and you can't say nothing, you can't go on the stand or nothing. You know, and so we were trying to do. That's where the innocence defense came in. And I'm so sorry. It's just that I can't claim insanity, but I really was outside my body through this whole experience. And you know, I can't apologize to the family enough. There's nothing I can say. I can't give them back their mom. You know, and it crushes me, it hurts me on a daily basis. That's why I really want to affect change. If ever given a chance, I want to help so many people, because I could not. I took so much from so many people.
Okay, I think I understand, sir, but you know, based on everything that you said, and I just have just two more questions, then I go to other board members. Why was it necessary for you to use a hammer?
It was the first thing that I saw. It was right there. It wasn't in a toolbox or nothing. It was right there.
But this is someone that you said that you knew two or three times and tried to show you.
The first time.
And yet you decided that you wanted to use an instrument, a hammer, to eventually murder a person. Why? What was going on in your mind? Why would you get something like that, sir?
I can't bring my own religion. I can't, you know, but I was just so conflicted. I had so much stuff going on in my head. I was so repulsed by what I was doing that I just wasn't there anymore.
Wait a minute, now you just made a comment. Excuse me for interrupting, sir, but you just made a comment that you don't want to blame it on religion, but what religion had to do with someone beating up someone with a hammer? Now that, you know, maybe that's a different religion that I'm familiar with. But what did religion, and you said that you were prepared to go to church the next day, Sunday, so did religion have anything to do with it, or that's just something that came to your mind that it was religion?
Ever since I was growing up, I went to church, and you know, we're not supposed to have sex before marriage, and you're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to do that. And then, but when this happened, when the nature of what we were doing, like, came to my head, I was so repulsed by what I was doing. I freaked out. It's unexplainable. I mean, I try to explain it, but it's despicable what I did. But it wasn't, I never thought, yes, I'm going to go ahead and do this. You know, I'm going to kill her. That never came to my head. It wasn't premeditated. It wasn't planned. It was a spur of the moment. I was freaking out. And I'm so sorry.
Okay,
it
so just, I thank you to share that with us before, and I'm not rushing you, but we don't want you to repeat what you already said. Let me just ask one other question that may be a little easier for you to answer at this time. I do take note that there was some restitution involved here. Have you paid any restitution at all as of this moment, sir, as a result of
yes.
this?
They've been taking money off of, I've been working for years and years and years, and every paycheck, they take 20% of my paycheck towards restitution.
Okay, sir. Well, that was a whole question I'm going to ask at this time. I'm going to yield to other board members at this time who may have some questions for you. Board members, any questions at this time for Mr. Watt? Yes, Honorable Mr. Galanis.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Mr. Ward?
Yes.
I recognize that I'm rehashing some of what was already said, but going back to the beginning, at first you denied involvement in this crime. There was a jury trial. We have a report from a psychologist dating back to the original offense, citing adjustment disorder with depression. You were seen to pose a threat to society. Even in our discussion,
Hold on, sir. I'm so sorry, but I can barely hear you. There's distortion.
Pardon me. I don't know how to account for the distortion. Is that better now?
Hello?
Is that better now?
I don't know if you can hear me. Is there any way you can use the other phone the other guy was using?
No. We're using the same system, sir.
All right.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I'll try to do my best.
Thank you, sir. Again, you denied involvement in the crime. There was a jury trial. You were found guilty. There was a statement early in the case from a psychologist that you had some sort of adjustment disorder with depression. You were seen to pose a threat to society. Can you hear me so far?
I think I wrote you that. I denied everything after talking. Like, I denied it at first for the reason that she asked me. Like, I can't talk to anybody about it, can't brag to no friends or whatever. But when I got an attorney, they told me that I had no choice but to sit there and stay with that statement, that I had to, our whole defense depended on me to sit there and plead innocence. And so I stuck with that for the years of the trial.
I'm putting the microphone a little closer to my mouth. Can you hear me clearer now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I have a tough time reconciling.
What?
I have a tough time.
I'm doing my best, I'm sorry.
I have a tough time reconciling the nature of your crime and your description of the event as a mistake. You sodomized an individual and murdered them with a hammer, and you're calling this a mistake, and I just have trouble with that. How are you paring it down to a mistake?
I'm trying to take responsibility for my actions, but at the same time, it felt like an out-of-body experience for me. You know, I couldn't stop what I was doing. I was so out of my mind when this happened. All I can think of is, you know, I was a juvenile and my brain wasn't developed enough, and I could not handle the fact that we were having anal sex and what I had just done. Through my upbringing, you know, religious upbringing and everything, and then it all crashed down on me, what was going on, and it was a mistake. It should have never happened. I'm sorry that it happened. I can't take it back from what happened. You know, I wasn't out to kill her. I wasn't sodomizing her. I wasn't raping her. It was anal sex, and then my brain just couldn't handle what was going on at the time.
Well, sir, and again, not to use your words against you, you said earlier you were a monster. Of course, that's not a legal definition.
I did what a monstrous act.
So, how are you okay now? How are you well-adjusted now?
What did you say?
How are you well-adjusted now? How are you a well-adjusted person now, sir?
Hold on a second. Is this phone got a bad connection on my end? No? Oh. He's breaking up. I'm hearing every other three words he's saying. Oh, it's a good phone? Okay. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Please repeat what you're saying.
I said, how are you a well-adjusted person now? You described yourself as a monster when you were young?
The act that I committed was a monstrous act. It should have never happened. For the longest time, I still feel that I deserve to be here for the rest of my life. That's how I felt about what crime I committed, and I can't take that back. There's nothing I can do or say to the victim's family. And so, that's how heinous of an act it was. You know, nobody should have to sit there and hear that something like that happened to their mom. And me being silent for all these years just exacerbated the problem. It just made it worse. Instead of me being able to talk to the victim's family and tell them what happened and accept things, I know they want to kill me. I know they don't want me ever to be out of prison. And, I'm not that person anymore. I've matured. I've grown up. I've taken responsibility for my actions. I've bettered myself. I've done everything in my power since I've been locked down to be the best human being that I could possibly be. And now I'm wiser. There's no way anything like this could ever happen again. There's no way.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mr. Poetis. Honorable Mr. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Mr. Ward, I'm looking at the pre-sentence report, and there's a statement in here that says that you were regularly involved in killing animals. Is that true?
I was what? Killing animals?
It says you were regularly involved in killing animals.
That is the first I've heard of this. I don't know anything about that.
Okay, thank you. It's just a statement in here. So, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mr. Rittenhouse. Anything, Honorable Mr. Neal?
Well, can you hear me, sir? Can you hear me, sir?
What did you say?
I said, can you hear me?
Yeah, but the phone keeps cutting in and out. I'm trying.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, sir?
I'm sorry, the phone keeps cutting out. I can't.
Okay, sir?
Yeah.
Sometimes people pause when they're talking also, so it makes it really hard when you jump right in there just because there's a small pause.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I can't understand what he's saying.
Just listen, sir. Just listen and then answer the question. Just listen. Don't interrupt. Just listen. Please go ahead, Mr. Neal, sir.
Okay, sir. You keep going on about that when you realized what you were doing, you went crazy. And then you used the hammer to beat the woman to death. I just have a problem understanding how you go from you did something wrong to murdering the woman. But you did make the statement that you personally said that you should be there for the rest of your life in prison.
Excuse me, my counselor said it's because I think you're on speakerphone that I'm getting feedback or something. I can't. Is there any way you can turn off the speakerphone when you talk to me and then turn it back on when I respond?
No, sir.
No. That won't work. So do you understand that last statement I made?
Hello?
Did you understand the last statement that Mr. O'Neill made?
Well, I can hear you just fine. I just can't hear them.
Okay, I'll try it one more time. As you went through your explanation, about everything that's happened and you know, why you shouldn't have done it and everything, you did make the statement that you felt you should be in prison for the rest of your life. If that's the case, why are we asking you to prolong the next sentence?
I'm sorry.
Why are you asking? I'm just going to paraphrase what he said. You said that you should be incarcerated for the rest of your life. Why are you asking this board to move you to your next sentence, sir, if you feel that you should remain in prison for the rest of your life?
No, what I meant to say when I said that is when I first came down, when this first happened, I deserved, in my heart, to sit here and be here forever because I was a different person then. I was so, you know, filled with you know, hopelessness and loss. And, you know, but I don't feel that now. I feel that, you know, if given the chance, I can sit there and I can help a lot of people, lots of families that have been victimized, like the family that's sitting in there now, the victim's family. I know that I'm a good person. I lost connection completely.
Okay, I have no further questions.
Okay, Mr. Neal has no further questions for you at this time. At this time, we're going to your supporters. I believe that you have some supporters present. Am I correct? Anybody here to support? Either one of you wish to speak at this time? I'm going to give you an opportunity to speak. If either one of you wish to speak, please come forward. And would you state your name for the record, ma'am?
Sure. Shirley Ward.
Welcome to the Board of Executive Clemency. And what do you want to tell the board this morning, ma'am?
I am his mother, and we were very close. He has a strong sense of right and wrong, and he grew up with that. He was in church. We were very strict with him, probably too strict. But he knows right from wrong, and he knew that. You know, when he went on this rampage or whatever it was, he knew that it was wrong. He knew that he did in the middle of it. He just couldn't stand himself anymore. But I would like to say it didn't come up in the trial, but he went to a counselor of some kind. His father took him, and I didn't know this. He was in depression. He was in deep depression. He was having trouble in school, not doing well. He had the ability, but he didn't have the confidence. He was very, his self-esteem was really low. And anyway, because he was depressed, they gave him a medication, and I still have that medication at home in my bathroom cabinet. But I don't remember what it was. But anyway, because he was depressed, they gave him a medication that was supposed to uplift him, to make him more positive, more energetic, more, you know, get him out of the depression. I didn't know that until this happened. And then I got the medication. I called a psychologist or whatever he was, and I asked him, my son is in so much trouble. What's in that medication you gave him? And I really, really honestly believe that medication was like an upper. It made him too much. And I think that's where it all started with going wrong. He was, my gosh, I mean, he was like the perfect son for me, other than being depressed and having to fight with him to go to school and to get good grades and that kind of thing. We went everywhere, he and I. We traveled, we went to Brazil, we went to Ecuador, we went to Yellowstone, he took a wilderness leadership class. He loved animals, and you know, that statement in there that he killed animals, you know, that's ridiculous. That is absolutely, he was an animal lover. We went to a lot of game and fish workshops, and they told me that they didn't want to usually let kids go. But he was such a good, well-rounded kid, and with the knowledge, he knew a lot about animals. He loved animals. You know, I don't know where that came from. But when things like that popped up here and there during his trial, that, you know, where is this coming from? You know, it's just somebody's just thrown in there for speculation. I don't know. But I know that he did love animals, and he knew a lot about animals. He learned a lot about nature. He was very involved with doing things like that. We went backpacking, we went camping, we did, you know, we went to Alaska, we went everywhere together. And you know, I don't think there was one day in his life where he didn't hug me and say, "Mommy, I love you." He told me that all the time. And he was the kind of kid that you could tell him things. I was a coach in school and I volunteered in the community programs. So I knew a lot, quite a bit about sports. And I was kind of an enthusiastic go-getter kind of a person. And Stephen let me tell him how to coach him while he was playing. He was never disrespectful to his own coaches. But if I could tell him something like, "Your hands, watch your hands, you know, keep your eye, you know, eye on the ball," and that kind of thing. But and strategy. I taught him a lot of strategy on how to make plays, when you do this and when you do that. And he was very willing to let me talk to him that way. And one time I was up on top of the ball field was lower than the stadium, I mean the stands, and I was up on the stands, and I heard one of the kids tease him, harass him about, "Yeah, let your mother tell you how to play." And Stephen said, "Of course, she knows what she's talking about." And then there were a couple of other kids, you know, who were kind of friendly with him, who said, "If you had his mother, you'd listen to her too." And he, you know, on that game, he hit 3 home runs in that game. And, you know, the confidence came back. So he and I worked well together. We did everything. I went out to visit him every week, unless I'm sick. A few times I had some community things that I had volunteered for and I didn't get to it. But when I was down there, his fiance was down there, and sometimes, most of the time, we both were down there. And I've talked to him, and he does things on the yard that people like him for. He says he didn't have very many friends. He had tons of friends, but he was depressed and he didn't realize it. When we were asking for letters for support for him, character letters, there were so many people, there were hundreds of people who were willing to write for him, and he said, you can't have this money. They don't have time to listen to it. So, you know, I know what I'm talking about. I know that he is a person who has grown and changed, and that he still wants to do the right thing. He's very concerned about doing the right thing. He does things like a couple of years, he took little pieces of paper and he cut up, and he made little Christmas cards. People on the yard, some of the guys cried when you gave them their little card. They had been in there for years and never had a card or a letter, and he did that. He did. He does things like that all of the time. He's, when we go into the visitation rooms, there are so many people that recognize him and are very positive. The people, the officers are always complimenting him, saying something nice. They say things nice to me about him all the time. He doesn't belong in there anymore. He needs to be out, and he needs to be doing something to make something of his life and contribute to the community. And our family is that way. Our family has always had this thing of doing things for other people. And he's that way too. He just hasn't had a chance to show those things.
I believe we understand and certainly appreciate it, but I'm going to see if board members might have any questions for you at this time now. Board members, any questions? Board members don't have any questions for you, but we do want to thank you so very much for your participation, and thanks so much for coming today. And we do acknowledge the receipt of all of the letters of support that you did, that's been presented to the board. All of us had an opportunity to read them and comprehend what was said. But thanks again. Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else wants to support us, wishes to speak at this time? Good morning, ma'am. And what is your name, please, ma'am?
Good morning. My name is Shelley Stewart.
Oh, welcome to the board. And what do you want to tell the board this morning, ma'am?
Well, I'm Stephen's sister, and I just want to reiterate, I know I've come before and said some things, and I had some difficulty last time when I was here because of the first opportunity. It was exciting and scary. But Stephen, he is a good person. He goes out of his way to try to make other people feel better. He, as horrible as his situation, as anyone's situation would be inside prison, whether, you know, they deserve to be there or not, it's not an easy place to be. And he, my mother and father have done a lot too. He has visitors every single weekend from the time he went in. I can think of probably on a couple of hands in all these years, a weekend that he hasn't had a visitor go. He has support from his family and from his friends. He goes out of his way to correspond to people that have no opportunity to come see him. They're out of state. They've never gone to see him in prison. But he has kept up correspondence over the years with many, many people. He has developed new relationships since he was in prison with people outside of prison corresponding, and continued relationships that he already had. Relationships with people are very important to him. I think it's what keeps him moving. He does have supportive people. He has people that want to see him succeed. And he goes out of his way to do kind things. When we go to visit him, I don't see him as often as I would like to. I, you know, work and my kids and whatnot. But I do get the opportunity to go down there. And his purpose, he lives for those visits. He lives for interaction with people, you know, from his life, from the outside world. And he goes out of his way to make people laugh, to make people feel good. He thinks of jokes to tell to keep us entertained when we go down there. My daughters have gone to see him. They're 22 and 24 now, and he's never known them outside of prison. But he's corresponded with them, and his other nieces and nephews, written letters. You know, they go down there, and he would read books to them when they were little kids. You know, they play puzzles and play card games, and so he craves that positive interaction with people, and he does go out of his way to try to do nice things for people. You know, my nephew was having difficulty in school. I mean, he just writes these most uplifting letters, you know, to try to give these kids confidence and to help them feel good, and, you know, a different perspective than a parent might give them, or a friend, you know. And so He is, as he said, he does want to make a difference. He wants to be a positive, you know, contributor and impactor in people's lives. And I truly believe that, he, you know, when he gets out, that he will continue to develop those positive relationships and to try to continually improve himself and to make things better for the other people around him. I think that's super important to him. And I look at the day when he has the opportunity.
Thank you so very much. Board members, any questions? I see no questions from board members. Thank you so very much for coming today. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am. Please come forward. And please state your name for the record, ma'am.
Diana Harrington.
And what do you want to tell the board, ma'am?
Just reiterating what his sister and his mother said. I've known Steven since elementary school. And again, he is the most positive, upbeat person I've ever known in the position that he has been in. And he has goals, he has ambitions, he wants to make something of himself. So I feel he does deserve the opportunity to be able to show what type of person he can be compared to what people have seen of him now. But again, talking to anybody that knows him, he is the most positive person that anybody has known in the situation that he has. And he just wants to help people in regards to, you know, starting a foundation, looking at charity work, doing what he can to make a positive impact in society and to be able to make something of himself with the programming he's done. He's basically done everything he can take in there right now, keeping himself busy with schooling and helping other people with what they can in regards to their schooling. But I just feel he deserves the opportunity to be able to show what type of person he can be.
Thank you so very much. Board members, any questions? We don't have any questions. Thank you so very much for coming today. Is there anyone else wishes to speak on behalf of Mr. Ward? Anyone else wishes to speak on his behalf? Anyone else speak on his behalf? We have no one else. Then we will go to the victim's side. I don't know, I do know that we do have an attorney. I don't know whether you want to come first or you will determine who might come first from the victim's side.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. The victim's son would like to address
the board. Okay, please come forward, sir.
I'm keeping this short. Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. Please state your name for the record, sir.
My name is Brian B.R.E.N.T. Webster.
Thank you so very much. And what do you want to tell the board this morning, sir?
I'd like to urge the board not to consider this 412B. I'd like this taken off the table for quite some time. People to my left have a mission, and everything they said was fine, and on this site we have a mission. I want this off the table for a long time on behalf of the family. I felt like much of what I heard today was an iteration was versions of stories that have mutated for 25 years. My mom and him did not know each other. They were not lovers, they were not friends. Are you familiar with the literature? The wounds applied to her were post-mortem. So much. I'm very sorry. I never took a dime of Mr. Ward's money. I refused any of his restitution. We don't wish him ill. We don't wish him death. I just don't want him released. My sister doesn't get clemency. My brother, who wouldn't be here, doesn't get clemency. I get no clemency. We have to live our lives, and I don't think this 412B is way too soon for us. I probably have a hell of a lot more to say, but I'll stop now.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Let me see if board members might have any questions, sir. Board members don't have any questions. Thank you so very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, and attorney, would you state your name for the record, please, ma'am?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Wright. My name is Karen Kemper. I'm from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office.
And welcome. Litigation Bureau. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. What you've heard today is not a mistake. This is an individual who has been convicted of a vicious murder. His description, frankly, is repugnant. You can read the packet that's before this board, as I know you have, and at no time did you read the story that he told you today? It's important, and I apologize in advance to the victim's family for needing even to bring this up, but because the inmate did, it's my duty to make the record clear. He claims that this was consensual. He claims that it began with intercourse. But you will see in the materials that you have that there was no evidence of vaginal tearing or anything in that regard. It's not a mistake that someone breaks in to a woman's home, brutally rapes her, sodomizes her rather, and then bludgeons her six times with a hammer. Six times he wielded that hammer. Six times he made a choice. Not a mistake, a choice. This is somebody who knew right from wrong. You heard his mother speak. He was raised in a good home. He had advantages and privileges many people don't have. He was able to do things and participate in activities many people don't have an opportunity to participate in. He knew right from wrong. He chose to kill. When he said that he deserved to be in prison for the rest of his life, that is the one thing that the state and the victims can agree with him on. He absolutely deserves to be in prison for the rest of his life. He minimizes, he alters, he changes reality. He told you that he'd been doing pretty well before the murder. That's not true. That's simply not true. You can look at his juvenile history and see that just the month before, he was stopped for committing a burglary. This isn't somebody who was doing pretty well. There were four open referrals on him for burglary. He wasn't doing well. It's also important to note that the officers involved in this horrific crime noted that he staged the body. He knew she would be found, and he staged the body hanging off of the sofa in a very disturbing manner. He said that he's different from the people that he's in prison with, but in a very fundamental way, he is not. He is a convicted murderer. The state is asking you to give effect to a jury verdict rendered long ago in a case where he had denied from the very beginning that he had anything to do with this woman or her death. It was only because the police, when they contacted him, noticed blood droplets on his shoes, and those came back to the victim. We're also asking you to give effect to his appeal in the Arizona Court of Appeals. His entire case was reviewed, his appeal was denied. Give effect to a prior post-conviction relief, where it was reviewed again and denied. To give effect to prior habeas proceedings in the federal district court, where it was denied, and in the Ninth Circuit, where it was also denied. As to restitution, I respect the victim's point of view that they don't want his money, that they consider it dirty money. But it is important to note that he owed $16,940, and as of today's date, he has paid $1,974.07. I believe this board should also know that the inmate has a pending Rule 32 proceeding in the Superior Court of Maricopa County. That has been stayed as of August 29th. I have the minute entry here. And he is seeking post-conviction relief based upon his age at the time of the offense. I believe that the defendant was 17, not long away from his 18th birthday at the time, and as the state contends, well knew right from wrong. So for all of these reasons, the state asks, and for certainly the reasons given by the victim, and I should say that I did speak to the victim family beforehand, each of them expressing that this has been 25 years of torture for them. And one phrase that they said this morning to me when I was talking to them was, quote, killing her after she's dead. And there could be no better example of that than what he said to this board today, which you know does not match what he said before. The community would not be safe if this individual was released into the community. And so again, for all the reasons that you've heard today, I would ask this board to deny his request.
Thank you so very much. Board members, any questions? No questions from board members. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the victim side wishes to speak? Anyone else? Please come forward, ma'am. State your name for the record.
Kathy Webster.
Thank you. What would you like to tell the board?
I'm the victim's daughter, and it's been a long 25 years, but I just wanted to say that she was a very loving mother, and kind and genuine, and I don't have her anymore. So, but she's in my heart, so I just ask that you don't let him out. And I'm sorry for his family, but I'm suffering every day, so that's my family. Is. But thank you.
Thank you. Any question, board members?
No, sorry.
No questions. Thank you. No questions. Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else on the victim's wishes to speak? Anyone else? I just like to say it three times. Anyone else? No one else. Therefore, we're coming towards the end of the hearing. But before we do that, board members, do you have any further questions for Mr. Ward at this time? Board members, have no further questions, Mr. Ward. This is your hearing, sir. We do want to give you an opportunity to make a final statement without repeating yourself to the board, and so before the board goes into discussion and makes its determination. Anything else you want to tell the board this morning, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you for allowing me to speak today, first and foremost. And, you know, in regards to the burglary, I wanted to put it on the record that when I was 16 years old, 15 or 16, I can't remember. I don't know, maybe it was even 13 years old. That burglary was baseball cards. The house in question was a paper route stop. I used to be a paper boy. And the son, I know this just isn't, you know, fair, but he used to, I mean, fair for me to say, but he used to always brag that he had all these baseball cards and that I didn't. And he, you know, it was, you know, he would make fun of me, and he ended up going on vacation. And I was still there in the mornings, or the mornings doing newspapers. And I went inside and I grabbed some baseball cards. And it wasn't to steal them. I was just going to sit there and take them from him and then give them back to him afterwards, after he felt what I felt. And a part of those baseball cards, there was a little 12-inch bat that you, memorabilia bat that you get from going to a baseball game. I don't know if they still have those these days. This is so long ago. The dad heard me, and he woke up and he called out to his son, and the only thing I could think of was popping my head in there. It was dark, and I said, yeah, it's me. But then he realized it wasn't, and he chased me, and I dropped almost everything. And so when I was put, and he caught me, and when I was put on probation for that, there was no threat to life. I wasn't stalking anybody with a 32-inch Easton baseball bat or nothing. It was a little piece of wood, and it was with the baseball card collection. And so the court deemed that I wasn't not a threat, and I wasn't a threat. I was just, I wanted to sit there and get back at the kid who was making fun of me. I know it's pretty childish, right? But as far as, if I ever was allowed to reenter society, I know that I am not a threat to anybody. I will take a lie detector right now per the terms of me being released. Before you let me go, I will take a lie detector, and you can ask me if I'm a threat to anybody, any man, woman, child, and let that be the determining factor of whether or not I'm a threat to society. I am a good person. I've always been a good person. I just made a terrible decision all those years ago. And it's nothing I can come back from. As far as Kelly, and I think his name is Brent Webster, there's no words that you probably would ever want to hear from me. Like I said, blood money, or you said blood money. I'm so apologetic.
Please don't speak to them, sir. Speak only to the board, sir.
Okay. I want you to know that whether I'm in here or out there, you know, I pray that you can someday forgive me, not for me, but for your guys' sanity. You know, I truly am. I want to make a difference in this world, and I believe that, I'm that type of person that can sit there and overcome anything. Prison has been the worst and the best experience in my life. It allowed me to understand right and wrong better. It allowed me to understand maturity and who I am and who I want to be. And I've had my butt kicked over and over and over again. I've been cut with a blade, in prison. I've been attacked. And I know that it's not going to sit there and mean anything to you. But from an early age in here, I truly am regretful of that day. I wish I could take it back. I wish that you didn't have to suffer the way you have to suffer. And I plan on spending the rest of my life, helping others who have been in the same place that you're in now. That is my dream, and I really am. I will be a great member of society, and I thank you again for you allowing me to speak today.
Thank you so very much, sir. And at this time, the board is going to prepare to go into discussion. We know that this may be an emotional situation once the board makes this determination, but we're going to ask that each of us, as far as possible, remain very professional. And I do want to say I should have said it up front, but when we exit this room, we're going to ask the victims if they would exit that door over there. We're going to ask the supporters if they would exit this door, just for the record. Okay. At this time, the board is going into discussion. We're going to ask that everyone would remain quiet. The board will make its determination. It may sound as if we're talking to someone, but we're not. We're just talking among ourselves at this time, the four of us. And once we complete this discussion, the board will make its determination known at that time. The board is now in discussion. Any board member wishes to lead off the discussion at this time? The Honorable Mr. Kiwanis, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I'll try to keep it short. Based on the dialogue with Mr. Ward, there's substantial reason to believe that due to the serious and heinous nature of the crime, that is the rape and murder of a mother of two and the ensuing lifelong trauma to the family, the release of Mr. Ward into society would create undue risk to our community. And I would also like to add, and I recognize that we all have our own individual votes, that I recognize we already have the mechanism in this state for a one-year offset. I recognize there are states that have much longer offset options, 3, 5, 10 years, but unfortunately in the state of Arizona, 1 year is all we can ask for. And that's where I'd like to begin the dialogue.
Thank you so very much. Honorable Mr. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. It often happens that the story that we hear explained to us by the inmate is quite a bit different from what we find in the materials that we have, the official record, the pre-sentence investigation. And that's certainly true in this case. you know, hearing Mr. Ward, he does sound like a very positive individual, and he can certainly be a very positive individual and still contribute positively to the world, but I just can't get past the crime and what happened that day. So I'm leaning with Mr. Quinones. Thank you.
Thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Nielsen. Honorable Mr. Nielsen, sir.
Yes, sir, thank you. I don't know, what I'm hearing is almost a justification for both crimes that he mentioned. Some other child had something he wanted, so that's justification to minimize at least the crime of a burglary. And this one, because he committed a crime or an act that, as he's doing it, he feels is wrong religiously, he goes crazy. But, you know, he's committing the act, and then his story is that he went crazy and killed this woman instead of going to church where you normally get, absolution from your church. But in hearing everything, it sounds more like he's justifying what he did rather than truly admitting the wrongfulness of what he did and the true scope of the ramifications of his actions. So, I just want to fully remember, but based on that, I am in agreement with Mr. Quinones.
Thank you so very much, sir. This is one of those situations that come before this board. The board has to make its determination. And I think that based upon the evidence that has been presented to the board today, and there are some positive things, but based upon the overwhelming evidence that's been presented to this board today, and based upon the offense itself, and based upon where we stand at this particular moment, I'm not going to delineate at this time other things. I will state to what the board has voted, but at this time I'm just going to move forward, and I move to deny Stephen Ward ADC number 108103 412B 411, that is parole to his next consecutive sentence or home arrest, and my motion is to deny with a 1 year set off.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Neal, agreed by Mr. Gowanis and Ms. Rittenhouse, and reasons for the now and board members, there may be some that I may miss, so I ask that you would listen and add any that you feel that might be appropriate at this time. Serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant behavior, trauma to the victim, seriously bodily injury. I would also point out the fact that there had been previous violations of previous criminal records, that is prior history, and that's what I'm going to suggest at this time, but I'm prepared to include any others that any board member wishes to be included at this time. Hearing none at this time, Mr. Ward, you've heard that the board has voted to deny your 412B 411, that is parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. I have stated the reason, and I've also, as part of the motion, a 1 year set off. I know that it's been requested that we would extend it, but however, as Mr. Gowanis has already indicated, under the laws of the state of Arizona, statute of the state of Arizona, the board can only extend it for 12 months. Therefore, do you understand, Mr. Ward, sir?
I'm seeing you in a year instead of 6 months.
Yes, sir, you will see us in a year, thereabouts. It won't, it may not be an exact year, but thereabouts in a year, because this crime did take place after 1984. Therefore, the board has the right to extend it, set off for 1 year. Therefore, we will see you in around a year from there. This board will place, you will be certified, rather, by the Department of Corrections for the hearing, and then the board will place you on this calendar at that time, sir.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. This will end the hearing. Thank you, Mr. Ward. Thank the family members, and thank so much to the victims. And this will end the hearing. Victims, this door. Supporters, this door. Thank you so very much. The hearing is over.